Next up on the Renaissance Man podcast, we have the music icon who shaped how each of us listen to R&B, Kenny Babyface Edmonds. Coming up, I talked to Babyface about working with everyone from Whitney Houston to TLC and how it felt playing his hits on NPR's Tiny Desk Concert and how he plans on going on tour in the near future. Up next, Babyface. Let's go.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Jalen Rose, and welcome to the Renaissance Man podcast, proudly presented by the New York Post, a show where we cover trends in fashion, entertainment, current events, and everything in between. Be sure to share this podcast with your friends, your siblings, your kids, your coworkers, your partner. Share it with someone, anyone you know can use some of this good old-fashioned soul food. This week's theme is the path to greatness. Everyone who has a dream or a goal is on a path to greatness. And on this journey, there are going to be some storms. There are going to be some moments where you'll feel tested. You'll feel the need to prove that you're willing to do whatever it takes to keep going on your journey. And if you know how I get down privately and publicly, I will never, ever, ever ignore when I'm in the news. And I know you might have seen, you may have heard that Jalen Rose got laid off by ESPN. It actually happened. But that's not for today. Today we're going to celebrate Kenny Babyface Edmonds. But I also want to acknowledge something that allows me to feel safe, to feel at peace, is that you're going to get a chance again and again and again to see me smile, work hard, be disciplined, and reinvent myself. Like my good friend and brother, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf once told me, stay humble and stay hungry. Never, ever be complacent. Having that kind of discipline, even when things are going well, is what's going to make you ready for whatever challenges come your way. So whenever you're on your path, make a mental list of what keeps you motivated. It could be your family, your teammates, your hometown that raised you. This will help you stay focused and keep your eyes on the prize. And if you're talking about humility and overcoming obstacles, my next guest is the perfect example of that. This gentleman does not want to give his own accolades. This gentleman does not want to promote himself. So I'll do it for him. Babyface is a musical icon. He's a lover of the craft, lover of music, and elevating the voices of others, especially Black women. Coming up, I talked to Babyface about the origin of his famous song, You Got That Whip Appeal, and what he's learned about love after writing so many romantic tunes, and how his path to greatness took the slow and steady route. Up next, Babyface.
Mm-hmm.
Buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. This is a special episode. My next guest is a multi-Grammy Award-winning recording artist, songwriter, and producer who is one of the most celebrated forces in the history of music. He's co-founder of the legendary record label LaFace, which launched careers like Usher, Toni Braxton, TLC, Outkast, and more. And check this out. He has numerous top 10 hits, 12 Grammys, 50 nominations. I didn't stutter. 50 nominations and a jaw-dropping roster of collaborations. It is my honor to welcome the iconic Kenna Babyface Edmonds to the show. Welcome, my brother.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for taking the time. I appreciate the love from a fellow Midwesterner. You grew up in Indiana. What was your childhood like?
Growing up in the Midwest, it's kind of, you're from the Midwest, so you know what that's like. We're from the actual.
Detroit.
Yeah, that's not.
And I played in Indiana for the Pacers for 6 years, so I know my way around it also. Absolutely.
Yeah. Indianapolis was a kind of a big small town. And it was great growing up there because there was so much music in the streets and going through school and everything. And it was a place where a musician could grow because there were so many people to work with and so many different artists that you could work with and actually have a chance to, you know, perfect your craft. So I enjoyed it.
Well, you clearly had a idea of what you wanted to do and who you wanted to be because you became songwriting at 11 years old. What inspired you to write your very first song?
A girl, you know. It was I fell for this girl named Rhonda Newbolt. And she, like, you know, first moment I saw her, I was like, oh my God, I'm in love. And then I went home and started a diary. And then I purposely started picking up the guitar so I could learn some chords so I could write a song. And that was like the first song I wrote was a song called Here I Go Falling in Love. And that was, it was about her. And I didn't know that that's what I wanted to ultimately be. It was just kind of like my release, you know, because I never played her the song. I was too shy to ever do that. So I just lived, you know, I lived through my music, you know, that was kind of my voice.
What have you learned from writing about love and heartbreak since then?
Absolutely nothing. You can write about it and sing about it, but it's different for everybody and every experience is different. So if I learned anything, it's never the same. It's not the same thing all the time. But the whole idea of writing about it is, it's kind of a release when you're writing about it from your own pain initially, but then when you're still even doing it for other people and you see what they're going through, then there's also something comforting about that, being able to tell someone else's story.
I've seen Smokey Robinson talk about writing for so many different artists and being inspired to do so. For you, what is it like to pen songs for other people and understanding that that song can go on to be a mega hit that you basically coined and delivered to someone else?
I think that was not something that I initially, when I was writing songs, I think I ultimately just wanted somebody to sing it and see how it felt and hope that it felt good. Didn't necessarily know things would turn into big hits. And when they did, it was wonderful, but it wasn't like I ever wrote it and I thought that everything was going to turn into that. So I crossed my fingers every time. I would only just write something and hopefully in hopes that people would like it and the artists would like it. And sometimes a lot of times the songs weren't written specifically for that artist. They were songs that I had just written. Okay, well, let's try this one. Because I just like to write songs all the time.
What was it like to be in the studio, write songs, and work with the late, great, legendary Whitney Houston?
Whitney was, it was always great working with her. She was always a lot of fun. She didn't necessarily like to do a whole lot of time, spend a lot of time singing. She liked to get in there and get it done. And so if it was harder for her, if she wasn't a voice one day, then she probably would just stop immediately and say, we just got to try this another day. And I always appreciated that because I hate banging my head against the wall on something, you know, knowing that you're probably not going to get it. So we kind of had our own language with each other, kind of knowing when to go and when to stop. And it was, you know, from the very first time of going in the studio with her and hearing her sing behind that mic. And it was always an amazing thing to hear this amazing, you know, vocalist that, you know, that to me was my favorite of all, favorite of all time. So what a blessing that was.
Your fingerprints have been everywhere in this industry, not only discovering talent, but being very talented yourself in writing. What was it like your initial introduction to TLC?
TLC was, I met Lisa and Tion before Chili was in the group. There was actually another artist, another girl that was part of the group initially that ended up being changed. Ended up changing because she just didn't quite gel with them. Mm-hmm. And so she ended up leaving and we were trying to find the right, you know, that right third person. And funny enough, Chili was, there's another group we had called Damien Damon. Chili was a background dancer for them. Mm. And she just had that look. And one day we just asked Chili if she could sing. And she sang a song for us. She said she's got a voice, and then we tried putting them together, and they were incredible. Their personalities, the left eye was brilliant, and you know, conceptually the things that they would come up with in the whole album concepts and the whole way that they kind of just rolled, it was coming from them. And it was incredible to watch these girls turn into, you know, these megastars overnight. It was unique in a situation. It was a unique situation that no one could have predicted that it was going to go like it did. Mm-hmm. That's when it's great, when you don't really know, and then something happens like that.
I was recently at a birthday party. And there's a young gentleman performing named Usher Raymond.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I consider him a friend. We have the same barber. Can you recall the first time meeting Usher, being introduced to his talent, and what did you think that he could become? Because he's really become an iconic artist in his own right.
Yes, he has. Usher, the first time I saw Usher was in LaFay's office, and we had the room full of our employees, and everybody was there working, and Usher came in to sing. And he was just a little kid. I don't know, he was like 13, 14 years old.
Wow.
and maybe younger, can't remember exactly, but he came in and he sang Into the Road. And he went up to every one of these girls that way older than him. He's flirting with them. He went all the way in and like, you know, okay, this kid's going to be something. And it took a little more time to get him there. But I knew then that he had something, and he's proven over the years that he's had something. And for him to be the icon and be as successful as he is and still in the game, you know, it speaks for itself. I'm very proud of what he's done as an artist.
It seemed like every person that you've influenced, and I appreciate your humility, gold, platinum, multi-platinum, diamond, Outkast went diamond, one of the greatest rap groups of all time. What about your introduction to Outkast?
Outkast was clearly brought in by Organized Noise, and they were clearly like their own thing. And they, you know, we were lucky to be to be in Atlanta and happened to be the company that got them. Mm-hmm. Wasn't just by the sense of us starting with a label there and being the place that people would want to go to. We got blessed in that because they clearly Outkast for the first hip hop rap act that really kind of came out of Atlanta and really changed the game. Mm-hmm. And so respected from every genre, and people give them so much respect, and it's crazy to think that we were a part of that, you know, and part of and to this day, you know, Outkast still, you know, the name mm-hmm. and the music that they created, it's forever.
And I noticed something as I was naming those artists. It highlights how the game has changed a lot. It seems like that was an era where you cultivate and you navigate an artist, and it's kind of like putting it in an oven versus now it's like a microwave generation based on the internet and social media. What do you see as changes in the game as it relates to developing artists?
Yeah, I think the thing is the things move so fast, there's not a lot of time to develop artists. You know, you can put a record out and put a single out, and if it goes, they didn't have any time to really, you know, grow, to, you know, work their, you know, practice their trade, get in front of audiences and learn how to perform, learn how to be hot. You know, there's no training ground for that because everything is so immediate. It doesn't take the same kind of time anymore.
Right.
So, and, you know, look, we used to say the same things in the past about, you know, cookie cutter, you know, all the songs sound alike in the 90s. We used to get that same thing then. And you get the same thing now. So it's all cookie cutter and all sounds alike. There's always been those things. But you have to keep your mind open, and whether it sounds a lot alike or whether it's cookie cut, it doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. Doesn't move. Does it speak to you? And for a lot of younger kids and the younger generation, it speaks to them. Mm-hmm. It may not speak to us the same way because we're not them.
Right.
We don't live the life that they live. We don't walk in their shoes. We don't hear things the way that they hear things.
Right.
Just as our parents might have not have heard things the way we heard things.
Correct.
So it's ever changing. And sometimes if it feels cookie cutter, well, that's because it's supposed to be cookie cutter right now. Mm-hmm. And it feels good. And what I always try to do is not be negative about it and try to compare. I try to listen to it and see what is it that people like about it? What's speaking to them? And many times it's just the way that they're saying the words. It's what they're saying, is what they're talking about, that we don't relate to the same. Love songs are not the same kind of love songs, but they don't talk about love the same way.
Correct.
It ain't, you know, nah, I ain't gonna be love together like that. It may come back one day to a certain extent, and then there are ours that certainly go there in their own way. You know, like, you know, Giveon, you know, he'll have a love song. It'll be different than the ones we did. But nevertheless, it's showing some vulnerability and things. And there's other artists that do that as well. So it's just different than what we did. Mm-hmm. And I just try to listen and learn from them as well, you know, and learn what their language of music and their language of love. It's better to listen with open ears rather than with judging ears.
And that's why you've been able to continue to not only have an illustrious career, but I would say continue to stay current always. That perspective allows you to do that. And on this show, I always like to acknowledge, because there are so many young people, when you ask them what they want to do for a living, they want to be an artist, they want to be in entertainment, they want to be in sports. And I like to get candid about the struggles that can come with major success. What would you say are some of the biggest challenges you've overcome in the decades of being in the music industry?
Well, for me, everything was a slow grind. So I didn't have overnight success. And so, and I had the same issues as everyone had, you know, signing contracts that weren't great and getting taken advantage of, all those things. And, you know, so the more you can read and understand exactly what you're signing, and when you sit with an attorney, when you're going over a thing, actually sit and go over the paperwork to actually try to understand the business that you're in. So that you don't have any surprises later in terms of what you signed on for. And I think more importantly, there's this thing with artists where the more you can have control over your own life, not only just financially, but also creatively, the more you can not have to depend on another writer or another producer in order to, you know, there are so many things at this particular point available to you that wasn't available as I was growing up, like on YouTube, where you can sit there and you can learn how to work any kind of, whether it's Logic or whether it's Fruity Loops, there's all different kind of programs that you can learn how to do music. And today with samples and everything, learn, even just GarageBand. There's so many things that you can do to learn how to become your own artist. And the more you do that and the more you mess with it, then the more autonomy you have and the more you can make those decisions and not depend on others.
Right.
And that's coming from a writer, producer, artist perspective. And I think that so many times people just kind of put their hands up and think they can't do it, but there's so many things at our hands right now with these computers, with social media, with everything, all right there. If you just do the research and start and work on it.
How did you get your nickname?
My nickname, funny enough, came from Bootsy Collins. And which was really funny is I just walked in the studio one day. The deal was doing demos with them, and I walked in the studio and he just yelled out "Babyface."
Wow!
Yeah,
the legend Bootsy Collins gave you your nickname. Now I'm pretty sure by now you've paid attention to. There's one Babyface, but there are a lot of babies now.
Yeah.
There are a lot of faces now.
Yeah.
So it's only right to ask you. Can you give me your top five songs that you've written that you consider baby making music?
And that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, everybody keeps their own thing. So I never think of it as baby making music because maybe the only true baby making song that I would probably have that comes to mind, I would only give you the one, which would probably be Whip a Pill. Other than that, I can't really tell you.
And by the way, that's such a classic. That song. How did that song come about?
Well, funny enough, I was heard Pebbles, who was married to L.A. Pebbles was having a conversation one day, and she was talking about. You know, she's talking about L.A. She said he's got that whip appeal.
Shout to the OG L.A.
And then I said, what? And he said, whip appeal. I said, I love that word. So I said, okay, I'm going to take that word. And so I just took that word and went and wrote the song.
Wow.
And that she only had said the word. She didn't write any of the song with me, but I ended up giving her credit for it because she said that word.
Right.
And I think it was a word that people had just said. But and I just kind of I said what I thought in my head. Okay, how would Prince do this? And that's how I approached it. That's I approached it with Prince was doing this, which was nothing like how Prince would do it. But
Well, it ended up being a classic. And for our listeners that haven't checked you out in your recent NPR Tiny Desk concert, it's legendary. I'm making sure you guys check that out. What was it like for you walking down memory lane and performing some of your greatest hits?
Those are always fun. When I do live shows, I always go through a medley of songs. And this one was particularly fun because, you know, I had, you know, Shante Moore and Tank and Avery. And it was fun because having them sing it with me and just be in that intimate setting. And that's just kind of just going for it. Hadn't done that in a while. And so that was a fun actually performance that we did together.
So it seems like you prefer live performances versus recording studio sessions.
No, I prefer them all. It's all part of the same thing for me.
What are the top songs you've ever written that you're proud of? I know that's like asking you your favorite kid. You've been doing this forever. You got so many classics, but can you just acknowledge some of the songs that you've written that people may not realize that you have?
That's hard to look. There's a lot of songs that I've written, and I'm surprised how many songs there actually are for all the different artists I've written over the years. And some things that people forget, and even I forget. I remember going to a concert that Drew Hill was performing at, and I was backstage, and I heard, because I had written, co-written as well, a couple songs, These Are the Times, with Drew Hill, and also We're Not Making Love. But there's two other songs that I've written for him too. And I forgot what they were, but I heard them playing these songs. And the concert said, God, that sounds familiar. What is that? What is that? And I went, oh shit, I wrote that. And I still don't remember right now as I'm thinking of it. But so, you know, look, over the years, there's just been so many different songs that I've written and written or produced. And I don't exactly even know how that was even possible. When I look back at how many things that were done, I think I just spent most of my time just writing, and constantly inside my closet, you know, writing, you know, when in the early days when everybody was out partying, inside my closet trying to write another song, you know, and that's the only way that could have happened because it was constant. It wasn't always sitting and writing for artists in particular. It was just writing in general. And those songs ultimately found their way, you know, to that artist. Some songs didn't find their ways to years later. There's a song I did on Tevin Campbell called I'm Ready that I actually wrote when I was in high school. I was like a senior and wrote that song, I'm Ready. And ended up changing a little bit, but the whole basic idea of the song was there, was written way back then. So certain things just didn't make it to the right artist till years and years later.
Well, your talent, your hard work, your humility all deserve praise. And I'm very grateful that you took the time to join the show. But before I let you get out of here, I got a rapid fire segment called Gone in 60 Seconds. You ready to do this, baby face?
I'm ready, let's go.
All right. Which musician was the most fun to be in the studio with?
Which musician? I'll say musicians. TLC, they were the most fun.
What is your favorite song to set the mood?
I don't have one. There is no song I'm going to set the mood for.
I'll give you one. Whip Appeal. How about that?
Well, I'd have a problem saying the mood with myself singing this song.
True. I got you. Which artist would you love to collaborate with in the future?
I'd love to collaborate with Sade and Drake.
Sounds like you already got something written for them to do this.
No, not yet, but maybe one day.
Yeah, we need to make that happen. Mm-hmm. We make things happen like that on this show. And lastly, but certainly not least, and I appreciate you taking the time, what's next for Babyface? Can we get a tour? What's happening? You need to go on tour.
We're working on something. We're working on some things, trying to figure that out. And so I think that that's going to come. And I'm just working on new music and a lot of different genres. And so I'm having a good time. So I'm looking forward to it.
Any new music, thoughts, ideas, artist collaborations that you want to share to tease a little bit?
No, I can't put that out because, you know, you work on it and you don't always know whether it's going to work out. So
true story. Well, I appreciate you taking the time. I'm a huge fan, and I can't wait for the tour because I'll definitely be there to support you. Appreciate you taking the time, baby.
Appreciate it, bud. Take care.
Last call. I'd like to thank Babyface for stopping by the podcast. Be sure to keep an eye out for his tour that's in the works. One thing that stuck out to me about Babyface is how after all of these years as an artist, as a songwriter, as a producer, he doesn't live in the past. Someone as accomplished as he could easily continue to stay the same and remain as one version of himself. He is open to evolving, and we should all try to do the same. So I ask you this: what are the ways that you have opened yourself up to change? Have you switched jobs, careers, motivations, moved to a new city, a new relationship, embraced a new way of doing something in your life? Whatever it is, just remember, keep reinventing yourself. And never, ever stay complacent. I'm the Renaissance Man. See you next week.